Hi, everyone. Welcome to Under My Host. I'm Corey. Producers Tyler and producer Porter and Brian Sullivan are sitting in with us today. We're doing our second roundtable, which we had such a great response to the first one, actually more than I expected, because it was really more for us than it was for anybody else. Since it's not like our usual talking about a brand and tasting alcohol. We always get completely wasted by the end of any show, so that's no different. But so we have an entirely new group of people here today. Sam Cruz was going to come back and he couldn't. Something happened. He needed to be at the brewery. But so our guests sitting in today are Charlie Nelson of Bellmead Bourbon in Nashville, Tennessee. Well, Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. Dave Weglars.
Yeah.
Hey there. And Dave Weglars of Still 630 in St. Louis. Anybody who listens to the show knows Weglars. And we've got Corey King of Side Project Brewing. And he's also he's the owner and brewer of Side Project. And he is the head brewer of Perennial Artisan Ales in St. Louis as well. And we've got Colin Joliet is joining us. And Colin's one of my contributors. Actually, he's like become everything on Craft Under My Host. He's well loved and he's very utilized. He's getting a lot of mileage. So hi guys, welcome.
Hey.
So, you know, everybody knows this is just like a shoot the shit thing. It's just so that listeners can get a chance to learn a little bit about you. Doesn't necessarily have to be about just about alcohol. We can talk about whatever we want. We do have a couple of things that I would like to talk about. And if anybody has anything that they want to ask each other or they want to bring up, just bring it up.
Cool.
It's easy. All right. So what's going on with everybody? We haven't had Corey on before. So Corey, why don't you just maybe, we're going to try to get you back on here after we return from our break. This was actually supposed to be our last show before we took a break. And then I ended up squeezing another show back on the schedule. So we'll be here next week. But we'll touch base with you coming in later into the summer. But so just tell everybody about how you got it, you know, just briefly, you know, the good stuff. We'll cover the
meat. Who I am, I guess?
Yeah, that would be great.
Oh, I'm just a big, tall ginger that makes beer. So, here in St. Louis, I'm head brewer, Perennial Artisan Ales from day one. And, you know, we make Belgian-inspired beers. If anybody is not familiar with us, we're pretty small still. We distribute a lot of places, but we're just kind of getting out there and... Side Project is kind of almost what you would call a private label or a brewery inside of a brewery. I have worked with some great people that let me kind of run with my own idea and start my own brewery as opposed to leaving and having to do my own brewery. They just kind of let me do it there, and I still work for Perennial, and I focus only on barrel-aged beers, spirits barrels, you know, wine barrels, funk, you know, stouts, barley wines, just all kinds of stuff all over the place. So, honestly, it's cool to be here with some distillers because those guys know way more about barrel aging than I may ever.
But, he's going to be looking for some sources.
sources and questions. Exactly right.
Well, that's what I love, having this combination of people like from the different areas. We don't have anybody doing wine on this show, but it's so cool to listen to what you guys have to ask one another. But tell people a little bit. Go on.
We can do some pretty dorky questions probably amongst each other, and most people are like, I don't want to know about that. That doesn't mean
anything. No, they actually do. The dorkier the dorkier the better. We encourage, like, if you've got a question, it's the same as, you know, any listeners. You know, I hate when people don't send in something in after the fact. You know, well, Brian will come with a list of questions, and generally it will get answered before he's got a chance to. So you may actually have something that you want to know, and it will just come up, you know, in discussion. Especially as like a guest host on somebody else's show. But it's really great to have you on. He and I have been playing phone tag, email tag for a very long time. And then he called when we were so completely ripped after a spirit show, right? Because it wasn't even beer. I think we had done like a distiller show. Were you here that day when Corey had called? And I was like, I didn't recognize the number. And I was like, why did I call him? I had just missed the call and we were loaded. And I'm like, yeah, this guy doesn't know me and I can barely talk. But anyway, I'm glad that you came on anyway.
You talked me into it, right? Yeah, it worked.
Exactly. It worked, so. Weglars, what's going on? Since you're also in St. Louis, what's going on with Still 630? Obviously 630 is coming up and that's their anniversary. They do something each the 30th of June. So
you want to let me talk about it or just want to tell everybody what I'm doing?
So everybody can tell he's been nipping all day long. You can't tell from that response. No, absolutely, Weglars. You have at it. Because Colin is on the show to tell you to shut the fuck up when we're going to move on.
That's fine. I'm going to talk about blending for a little bit. And then I'll get
to Dude, I love your product, man.
The best thing about the blending thing is Chip and Charles have still...
Congratulations, man.
Chip Tate, the founder of Balcones, and of course, like, Charles Jolie have, like, not been able to forget about the whole blending thing. And of course, Colin's laughing. Colin's never going to let that die either. So yes, so go on. So let's talk about blending.
Well, like you said, we learned a lot.
We did.
Yeah, we sure did.
I noticed you haven't had those guys on again. I hope I didn't stare them off again. Yeah, they don't want to teach people. Yeah. No, you're right, though. 6:30 is our name. You know, June 30th is the day we were founded. So our second formal anniversary party is coming up at the end of the month now. And we're really stoked to make it a bigger and better festival party than it was last year. We had a great turnout last year. This year, we're releasing a brand new spirit. We've got, it's kind of a variation. So I've got our Riley Point rye whiskey, which is our aged rye whiskey. Mm-hmm. And I took it and I finished it in a specialty ex-bourbon, ex-maple syrup barrel. And so it's got a little bourbon undertones, but a fantastic maple syrup finish. And so we're kind of going with a breakfast for dinner theme. And we've got a James Beard Award nominee chef, Rick Lewis from Quincy Street Bistro. Is going to be down here doing some food. We've got some cocktails from Colby's Coffee here in town, a local small coffee producer. And they're making some whiskey coffee cocktails. We've got some other cocktails. We have some fun and games and release their brand new spirit. And it should be a fantastic evening. Hottest pick in town, you know.
That would you say the hottest what?
Is it whiskey pong? Hottest pick in town. It's going to be it's the best damn thing happening on 6:30. I promise you that.
Are you going to go down there, Colin? Are you going to? So, Colin wanted to ask you about what was the Ghana versus USA tournament or the match. What was that?
I just want to know Dave's thought on the World Cup.
Too.
As a whiskey producer, he's well versed in that. Mm-hmm. Colin's referencing a time or two that we're in Chicago, and we went out to watch a couple games 4 years ago for the last cup. And we got interviewed on TV by the local news reporters because we were out there pretty hammered drunk supporting, you know, the USA at about 7 in the morning for our last friendly match against Slovenia, it was. And we got some rather infamous footage on that.
I bet.
Probably could look up online if anyone's so inclined.
So, okay, and ooh, that was interesting. And so I thought there would be a bit much bigger story there than that. But
so harsh.
Let me get this way. Colin told the reporter to take his shirt off and start pushing people. That was his advice.
Nice.
Colin's a shit stirrer. That's honestly what I love the most about Colin. And that's why I asked Colin to come on the show. So, Charlie, tell us what's going on what's going on in Tennessee?
Tennessee?
Oh, man. Lots of good things going on in Tennessee. It's a lovely day here today.
Are you back? Are you back? Did you headed? You went home already?
I am. I ended up coming back last night. I was afraid if I stayed in Atlanta one more day, I'd probably end up getting gout or something. I think I ate and drank. I was just eating and drinking all damn weekend. Not like there's anything new on that front, but I don't think I could take another buttery, bacon-filled ball of
shrimp. You have a heart attack.
And then just like shot after shot of whiskey and Fernet and... Oh, man.
Charlie was in town for the food and wine. In Atlanta, we had the Food and Wine magazine has a thing here every year. So they came here to promote. He and his brother, and Andy was here too, right? To promote Bellmead? Yeah. So, yeah, I did see you drinking from an enormous punch bowl. Not like lifting the punch. Now, you have to know, like, the boys are how, because I think Andy's taller than you. How tall is Andy?
Well, we're actually almost exactly the same height.
Of course.
About 6'4".
Yeah, they're tall. So this guy's like drinking it. It's like a cat drinking out of milk, but it's like a full size punch bowl, and he's just tipping that thing back.
And despite the fact that it was an enormous punch bowl, it was actually filled with some delicious punch that Dave Wondrick had made.
I didn't realize Dave was in town.
Yeah, he was, and he made it, and he was the one passing it around.
I would have been drinking from the punch bowl too.
Yeah, you can't really say no to Dave Wondrick. So,
very cool.
Yeah.
So I want to hear. So Dave Pickerell, you know, who we love so much, and of course when Dave was on, he talked about you guys. He's been, you know, you guys are his boys, and I know he was involved with helping you get the distillery set up.
Yeah.
So that everybody knows, you know, just to we'll go back over that the guys have a long family history. You know, their great, 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 I think, grandfather had started Nelson's Greenbrier, and they've, you know, revived the distillery and, you know, the name, but they were sourcing and blending whiskey, the Bellmead bourbon, until they could start to distill their own. So now they're is it going to be, you're going to open up in spring? Do you think that's when you guys will be ready to?
We're going to be opening our tasting room in like this fall. Okay. It's hard to say exactly when, but we've just got a little bit of mechanical work left to do, and we should be distilling there within the next like 6 weeks or so.
So exciting.
And so, so we're super pumped. All the equipment set up, just got a little bit of piping and mechanical work to do.
Very cool. And now, tell us the story. So Miss Louisa, who was your great, great, great grandmother, who ran the distillery after your grandfather had passed away, right? Is that what you've named her in honor of her? Big copper still.
Exactly. We were trying to think of a name for our still. And after we decided to name it Miss Louisa, I looked over at the still and I was like, hey, that's actually kind of a phallic piece of equipment. Maybe it's just going to be a nail.
Is this like Black Dick? There's always the you don't know the Black Dick. There's a story with Black Dick. No, it's Brown Dick.
Brown Dick.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sure there's a story with either.
Wasn't it Big Brown Dick? Wasn't that Big Brown Dick?
To fill everybody else in on the Brown Dick story, our Bellmead bourbon label is the original label from over 100 years ago, and the horses on the label were studs at the Bellmead plantation. The original label had the names of the horses on it, but we took the names off the label because one of the horses' names was Brown Dick.
Oh, yeah.
And that was.
We're thinking about putting that back.
It's like there's a brother thing because it's like Andy, I think, was the one who voted Brown Dick off the label. Charlie wants Brown Dick back on the label. And you found the painting. I think Brown Dick wins.
No, it scares me, to be honest.
We know what they say about Brown Dick.
Will Dave help you guys get started? Because the next whiskey up for you guys is Nelson's Greenbrier, right? Which is going to be a Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah. Dave is kind of, he's been mentoring us and advising us for years now, really. And he's kind of training Andy, my brother, to eventually become master distiller. Mm-hmm. But Andy doesn't feel as though he really has earned the title of master distiller yet, so he's going to wait for a while once he feels as though he has truly become a master distiller, because there's no real like test that you can take and pass to be called a master distiller, right? Like anybody can call themselves a master distiller pretty much. But anyway, Dave is training us, and our Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey recipe, from the original Greenbrier recipe, that will be the focus of our production at our new distillery. And fortunately, Dave is fairly familiar with our mash bill, or at least close to our mash bill, because it was a wheated Tennessee whiskey. And so when he was with Makers, obviously Makers was a wheated bourbon. So he is familiar with wheat.
Well, and so what makes a Tennessee whiskey a Tennessee whiskey?
Well, it's basically the same thing as bourbon, plus made in Tennessee, plus undergoes the sugar maple charcoal filtration process.
Okay.
So, you know, so it has to be made in the U.S. or in Tennessee whiskey, and since that obviously has to be made in Tennessee, then at least 51% corn, and then aged in new oak barrels that are charred on the inside. And you cannot use the barrel more than once.
So it's just the filtration that really it separates the two.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I mean, and
I don't mean just. I mean, but there's I mean, it is very much like bourbon.
Yeah, I like to say that they're kissing cousins.
well, it's like you were saying, like, well, what I love, what I love about your bourbon is that it does have a real prominent, you know, the rye. I love the spiciness. So I guess this will be the softer,
right.
Like you said, since it's a weeded bourbon, or, you know, like that mash bill. No, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But I really do like. So, Charlie, will you guys, when you start up your own production, will you go ahead and start creating your own Bellmead whiskey? As opposed to sourcing still?
Yeah, so, I mean, distilling our own Bellmead bourbon at our facility will be sort of a process. Like, initially, we'll start doing, like, 5 to 10% of that at our facility and keep, you know, 90 to 95% sourcing through Lawrenceburg, LDI, MVP, whatever you want to call it. And then over...
We'll cut that out.
Yeah,
we'll cut it out.
I know.
It's all right.
We could go into more detail with that if you want, but
no, okay.
We did what we had to do.
Right.
So,
I don't have a problem with that. I've said that before.
Yeah,
we did a show with the boys because we wanted to talk about how some distillers have what everybody has a different way of getting into distilling and to starting up their own distillery. But now you guys are becoming distillers, which is cool.
Yeah. But our focus and our signature brand will be our Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey, and everything else moving forward, apart from Bellmead, will be produced 100% at our facility. And over time, it'll take us like 7 or 8 years to fully transition Bellmead to being produced in-house. And that's just a matter of the aging process. I mean, we may come out with a younger Bellmead under a different label, like a Bellmead Young version or something, but it would be a different looking label. And so, we are going to be bringing that in-house. It's just going to be a slow process.
Cool. Do you guys have any questions for one another? I have something else I want to talk to Charlie about, but it's a little bit more in depth. Do you have any questions for Corey, or do you have any questions for the guys, Brian?
Actually, a question for Charlie about that sugar maple filtration. What's the process on the sugar maple itself before you use it as a filter?
You basically just take it and char. I mean, just like you would make regular charcoal, but you obviously want to control it. You don't want to char it too much or too little, because if you char it too much, then it'll just become too fuel and fall apart. But I guess under charring it, you can always just char it more. But it is, I don't know, you just take big ricks of sugar maple and set them ablaze. We're not
pretty out there with like a blowtorch.
Torch it. But I didn't know if
we're not going to have like a huge facility for like, you know, actually burning huge ricks on our own. And we're not going to have a huge mellowing vat either. I mean, at least relatively speaking, you know, ours is only a couple hundred gallons, whereas like at Jack Daniel's, I think theirs is probably like 5,000 gallons or more. But
how often do you have to change out that charcoal for the maple charcoal?
That's a good question. it's kind of up to you. It's a matter of taste, but we haven't really started using that yet, just because our still not fully up and running. But if you're kind of, I mean, it's basically the same concept as like a Brita filter, and you know, you're on the Brita filter. They say like change it like once a month or every few months. I think that Jack Daniels and George Nickel probably change theirs like maybe twice a year, two or three times a year. But I don't know exactly. And it's just something that you got to kind of keep tasting it and decide, okay, now it's tasting a little bit different. Maybe we need to change out the charcoal. But that's tough to say right now. We have in our plans, at least, to change it quarterly. But it's going to be a more matter of sort of trial and error.
They're still new. Like this part of what they're doing is still very new for the guys. So it's still really interesting. Corey, did you have any questions about the distilling or?
Yeah, I was actually wondering, Charlie, on your side, how long are you aging some of your different spirits in the barrel?
Our Bellmead bourbon, you know, the source bourbon, that were aged at least 6 years. Right now, it's on an average of like seven and a half. Our Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey, we're starting off aging that for at least 2 years in like half size barrels, and then we're working towards eventually aging them for at least 4 years in full 53-gallon barrels, and then that'll be our minimum. After we can get to the minimum of 4 years, then we'll start doing, you know, 4-year-old, and then just like 6, 8, to 10. Personally, I, just my own personal taste, and there are certainly exceptions to this, but for most American whiskeys, or at least American whiskeys that are aged in new barrels, I prefer American whiskeys aged in new barrels to be less than 12 years old. I personally think that, after 12 years, it starts to go downhill a little bit, and there are plenty of exceptions to this. But just from the barrels that I have tasted in warehouses that are like 11, 12 plus years, I think that they start to go downhill a little bit. But the ones that the exceptions are generally the ones that are actually on the shelf. But those are ones that have been, you know, cherry picked, those have been, you know, tasted and hand picked, and, you know, like the Pappy Van Winkles of the world. And then,
well, that's really weird, though. Everybody was talking about it, and then like everybody kind of quit talking about Pappy Van Winkle. It was like it's like somebody put like the kibosh on discussion about Pappy Van Winkle. I think it's just because the pricing became so ridiculous that it was like nobody. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, all of these like reviewers and bloggers and raters and magazines really made it way, way, way bigger deal than it really is. I challenge anybody to actually spend that money on it and try anything comparable in age made by somebody who knows what they're doing and say that it's worth. What were people paying? $1,000,
$500,
$700?
$600,
yeah.
Oh, that's
ridiculous.
I mean,
yeah. I mean, people are paying crazy amounts.
Well, and it just became a who can get their hands on it. It wasn't so much like, is it worth spending that much money? It was just, well, I've got it, you know?
Right. It's kind of like a status thing.
Yeah, it's like a status
thing. Right.
The like, worst stat, right? I could
like
think of a lot of
Beats by Dre. Status
Beats by Dre. What? I want to hear about the new spirits that you're coming out with. Spirit.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to make mine one of those must-haves for $1,000 a bottle.
Good luck.
Yeah. Get some dumb bloggers to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Some
blonde, not blonde.
Doing,
look at me. You said dumb blonde, and they all looked at me like, is she offended?
I didn't.
I looked at Tyler.
Even you kind of looked at it this way.
It's just, what are you talking about?
I did not even look in your direction. I noticed these two.
Yeah.
Don't let me in that group. I'm not.
I want to hear about what you're coming out with.
So what we have is a local liquor store, the one in Chief's Place, went out and hand selected a single barrel of Knob Creek bourbon. I know that's not really craft, but you know, it's a good whiskey, I guess. And they selected it, bottled it up, and then they have it for sale at their liquor stores. But then they did what any God-fearing Canadian would, and they filled the barrel full of maple syrup. And they aged that maple syrup in their bourbon barrel. So then now they have for sale a bourbon barrel-aged maple syrup, which is delicious. But if you're like me and you just dump it on there, it goes pretty quick. But so anyway, they had this empty barrel that was an ex-bourbon, ex-maple syrup barrel, and they gave it to me. And so I took it, and I filled it with a barrel of my Rally Point rye whiskey, which had been aging for a little while, and I kind of finished it in there. And I did that in early December. So it's been in there for almost 7 months now, and it's got a couple of little notes of bourbon, but mostly it's just a really nice maple syrup sweetness and finish to it. And it's at barrel strength. It's pretty potent. But when you prove it down to, 80 or 90, it gets a little, it kind of mutes that over-impressive sweetness a little bit and just has a really nice finish on it, if I do say so myself. And we're getting ready to launch that. I'm 6:30 there.
Oh, very cool. So is that... you have the one barrel, right? So it's a very limited release. Well, there you go. You can charge a $1,000 a bottle.
Let me put it in there. Less of this than there is Pappy Van Winkle. So let's just the price.
There you go. There you go. $1,000.
Exactly. Yeah. I really think that,
I think that could go for like $5,000 a bottle.
Exactly.
You know what?
That...
I'll give you a 10% discount on that price right now.
So, there you go.
Sure.
See, $2,500, you got two bottles. Okay. Is there a taste break?
Is there a what?
Yeah, exactly. $1,000 a piece for case break.
Oh, case break.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, we're excited about it. But I think what also you might be asking is, we were today, speaking of the day drinking, I was working with another local brewery called Alpha Brewing Company downtown St. Louis. And we're working on a collaboration where they brew an imperial black ale and then age it in some of my used rye whiskey barrels. And I brew the same beer and distill it and age that in a new barrel. And then we kind of co-release them. So like a little brewery lab style project that we're working on here. And I've been trying to get Corey here for a while to do something very similar, the side project. But he keeps giving me the cold shoulder.
He's so busy.
That's not true. That is not true.
I just wanted to call him out in public right now to try to
get him. Corey's got two brands that he's taking care of. Listen, I get the same song and dance for him. Don't even let him get to you.
This talk brought up a different idea I just had while we were talking.
Oh.
I was actually going to call you after this.
See, mouth?
But no, I was thinking.
You call him mouth.
Oh.
Yeah. I was just thinking. You know how he finished? You just finished that. You just finished your whiskey in that maple syrup.
Now he's gonna want to put some beer in there.
Well, no different than that. I actually have some of those maple syrup barrels too, and unfortunately, the beer wants to come back to life with the maple syrup, and so I've had some off flavors develop in the barrel. You have a beer that's 12% already, and the yeast is pretty stressed out, and then you put some more sugar in there, and you give it a year, and it kind of freaks out on you. But a lot of my favorite Scotch whiskeys, actually, from Glenmorangie, are usually finished. The ones, my favorite ones, have always been like the port finish, cherry wood finish, like, Angel's Envy does the same thing. They finish their whiskey in a port barrel. It's all done. And, I mean, I think it'd be really cool if it's something you'd had, Dave, like, we took one of your whiskeys and I brought you a fresh, like, cab barrel or something. You finished in a cab barrel, and then I brought that barrel back and actually brewed a sour into it or something else.
Oh, funky. Yeah.
So it's not, because on my side, the beer side, everybody's doing stuff in whiskey barrels, which I love whiskey. But I also like different barrels and different things. And I thought it'd be cool to smooth out, to maybe smooth out a whiskey with, you know, obviously do your whole normal thing and then double age it or finish it in a barrel that I supplied.
And then, I would love that, man. And I don't even know if we need to get into the money. I feel like we can work out a barter system. I'm just kind of thinking.
I'll take a couple bottles of that $5,000.
Yeah, you notice he says that like he doesn't want to talk about how much he's going to get for those bottles, right? That he thinks he's going to charge. We'll just worry about that later.
Making some fun. Finish it something different. Finish it in wine or something a little softer. And those are my favorite scotches. I know rye is a little more intense. And I love whiskey. You guys all talking whiskey right now. I want to sit here and fill myself a glass.
Well, but, you should.
But yeah, that'd be really cool.
Wait, are you not drinking? Are you going to be the one guest that doesn't drink on the show? Or you'll be the one, you can close out the show.
Yes, thank you.
Because we're going to be wasted.
All right, we'll see you later. Thanks,
I'm sitting here drinking beer right
now. Okay, excellent.
That's my go-to bet.
Well, and I...
Can I ask Corey a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What side project barrels are coming out lately? I'm ashamed to admit the only one I've had was the Origin, and it was phenomenal. But it's been a while since then, so I assume that you've had some others since.
Well, all the stuff I've released since then has been sours. So for the most part, or sours or saisons, for the most part, wine barrels. A lot of wine barrel stuff. I haven't released another whiskey barrel beer yet. My whiskey barrel stuff sits in the barrels almost a minimum about 18 months. That's not definite. It just seems to be where I like to taste the beer. So I haven't released another, I mean, I've only been going about a year now, so I haven't released another whiskey barrel beer, which Origin was my only one. I gave you all that. But yeah, so I have a lot of wine barrels. I actually just picked up a bunch of French oak cab barrels from Napa that are beautiful. And
the limousine oak?
What'd you say?
The limousine oak?
Limousine
That's
oak?
French, oh, the French yeah. oak?
French.
That's quite a.
I was about to say, you guys have more of an oak than I do. I don't know if it's limousine oak or not, but I get you. Yes, that's fancy stuff.
It is made of wood.
It was in Limousine, France, and jumped in a water fountain there. It was kind of the police
what?
Almost.
It's just Wags. Wags is starting. You're just starting to go. The spiral has begun.
France and France, water fountains and jump police.
It was a car? Was it a bell?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, you know, a while ago last year, I tried to get Wags and another friend of ours that's a winemaker and a friend that's a brewer to do a collaboration together. And unfortunately, the wine guy could not do it when we wanted to do it, and then somebody else beat us to it. So, which is fine. It doesn't matter. I'd still like, that was something that we talked about, like when we created Fermilab, it was to help, you know, to encourage and foster those kind of collaborations between areas. Now people are really working a lot more, but it would be great to bring in winemakers because there's such a shortage with these barrels right now that you guys are going to have to start utilizing other wood. I mean, it's just, but I know, I think it is. It's a great idea because the winemakers are done with the barrels a lot of the time. So, but like Corey said, and you know, we've had on, when we had Vinny on and, even, you know, like, Jolly, or Jolly Pumpkin, when we had Ron on, you know, you have to start to become familiar with the winemakers because of the yeast that are going to come from, you know, their vineyards that are going to be in their barrels.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a bit of a crapshoot, especially for somebody like Corey, because, you know, he's laying something down for 18 months and he's not familiar with the winemakers. It could be he doesn't know what's coming up.
Yeah, he doesn't have that high alcohol concentration to kind of
temper,
mitigate that wild yeast that's in there, right?
Yeah, so we have a lot of things on that side. I'm so jealous when I go to the distillery and watch you guys bottle and you just dump it out.
Pour
in the bottle. and you're like,
that's how we describe it technically.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to... I have to keep everything nice and sterile, or at least, you know, sanitized, probably as sterile, but sanitize as much as I can and everything, but, you know, nerve-wracking. And you watch it, I'll roll the barrel upside down, nothing that thing, drain the bottle. Like,
you can see pictures of Dave taking a bath. He can't get home. He's waiting in the distill.
Alcohol kills germs, baby.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I have a quick question
for Dave about the maple syrup barrels. When you actually got the barrel, did it have like a gallon of maple syrup still in it? Like when I've gotten some wine barrels, they'll keep a little bit of the wine or whatever, you know, maybe like a gallon or two still in it.
If I have an empty barrel or something, I'll leave, you know, a half gallon, gallon, just to keep the barrel integrity intact. But with the maple syrup in there, it was so thick and viscous that they dumped out everything they could. Naturally, there was kind of a coating on the inside that they couldn't get out. It wasn't like they intentionally left something there for me. But it had saturated the wood and was coating it. And there's actually some little, like, crystallized sugar on the outside that I'll break off every now and then. It's delicious.
That was delicious.
Yeah.
He's there with a razor. Good. Yeah.
No, you're here to say. Stop by sometime. I'll show you.
I would love to. Maybe you could get weird and take one of those old, like Tabasco barrels or one of the barrels that take hot sauce in there and do it.
That would be something.
Spicy whiskey or spicy beer.
Some of your unaged stuff. And you said get weird. Did you just tell Dave to get weird?
I heard that as well. I can
Dave's
vouch
there,
for
Charlie. Check. He beat you to it.
Check yourself.
What's that?
You're there.
They're calling me weird.
He's not weird. You got to pick. Everybody has to pick up. And Wiggs will do like the like feel bad for me. And I will say this on the air to everybody. Wiggs is a very like old, big, athletic, good looking guy. Don't feel bad for him. He'll act like he's the pick. I know your wife. No, I'm like he pulls that like it's okay. Everybody picks on me. Shut up. No, they don't.
Yeah, don't worry about him. He doesn't have any more feelings.
I have to talk about how attractive Charlie is because that was something. It was really funny because if I could have like sold dates, like we should have been auctioning when Dave Pickerell was on the show. He was going on about how good looking you and Andy are, and I think we could probably get something.
Yeah, he actually was. I listened to that episode.
It was
appropriate.
I only had to give them like 2 $5,000 bottles of whiskey.
and I think I was telling you last week that Charlie has like really got his beard has come in, and I say it's glorious. It's like shiny and very
it's majestic.
he's got a beard that a brewer would die for. Yeah,
it's well crafted. I saw the Facebook post. I'm like, man, that's awesome.
He combs it and oils it.
Oh, you have to.
Reads the stories at night.
He's got a regimen. Yeah.
I spend hours in front of the mirror just combing it every day and putting oil in it. I'm actually thinking about distilling my own beard oil.
Nice. Well, I mean, Stone has a beard.
Barrel-aged beard oil.
Have you noticed that there's beard oil for like people that work in like food? Like people are oiling their, but it seems like food
oil.
Industry people are.
Stuff.
Like, I need to read up on this. I saw somebody had put someone in touch with me about products for Kraft. And I'm like, am I beard oil? I'll have to look into it. I'm not really sure if that was what they wanted me to talk about. Okay. Yeah.
I haven't seen that, but I own mustache wax, just in case you got to pull it up a little bit.
I need to try some of that. I think I've got some decent potential to wax up my mustache, but I don't have any.
It puts people, random strangers, on notice. You're not a person to be trifled with.
Somewhere you have access to some train tracks.
Exactly. You know what I want? The guys probably don't know about this, of course, because they're not in your area. Why don't we talk about Diageo and what's going on? And for anybody that doesn't know, I'm sure you guys know who Diageo is. They're a a large conglomerate that owns many, many alcohol brands of, well, macro-produced alcohol. So, and they're not based in this country, which is not a problem. I mean, I'm not a xenophobe, but they wanted to be able to refer to whiskey that they produce as Tennessee whiskey, even though it is not made in Tennessee, or they weren't, or they were making it somewhere else and they wanted to store it in Tennessee. I don't like Charlie. You, I mean, Charlie was like on ABC News. Like,
yeah.
He can like give you the entire rundown. But what I want to also make sure that we cover is, I don't know if they've decided to, because even though the courts, like, they decided like the bill didn't go through and they wanted to like sue after this, are they, we'll cover this at the end, but are they, have they pulled out from doing that and have just moved on to Kentucky, or is, are they doing that in addition to trying to also stay in Tennessee? I don't really know what's going on.
There are a few things at play here. One is that you talked about the debate over the definition of Tennessee whiskey, mm-hmm. and that is basically Diageo wanted to be able to call something Tennessee whiskey if it's aged in used barrels.
Oh, okay, that's
and
right.
Our stance on that was that that would be lowering the standards of Tennessee whiskey, and that could be a slippery slope. You know, I personally don't think that just aging in a used barrel means that you're going to have an inferior product or anything like that. By no means.
Capitalizing on the term to make money, or hoping to make money off of it, not for actually producing the product accordingly.
Exactly. And something that I was also very passionate about is that, like, my great-great-great-grandfather with his good friend George Stickle to the state of Tennessee in 1870 to define the category of Tennessee whiskey, because too many people were confusing it with bourbon. And there were all these advertisements that they were saying that, like, Tennessee whiskey was a superior product, and I mean, the ads back in the day were pretty crazy, but and just very embellished. But anyway, Diageo, I've got a few theories about what they're doing, and I think a lot of people have multiple theories. But, like, one of the biggest theories going around was that Diageo, you know, one of their biggest competitors on the global level is Jack Daniels, and they wanted to lower the public perception of quality of Jack Daniels by saying that Tennessee whiskey can be aged in used barrels, and like that might cannibalize their George Stickle brand a little bit. But if it slows the sales of Jack Daniels worldwide, then that would be a success for them. And I'm just saying what other people were saying, basically. So that's one theory. And then, you know, they were also, it was really interesting because they were coming in sort of as the sheep and wolf clothing or whatever that saying is. They were basically saying that
it's a sheep and wolf's clothing.
that's really sneaky.
It's a dapper sheep. It's a sheep in its own clothing. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. No, I will say I've lost so many Facebook friends since that show. A lot of the brand ambassadors have dumped me. You know, I'm wrecked over that. Well, you know, we've had a couple of shows back to back between talking about Diageo and, of course, then the people that work for their brands. I kind of knew this was going to. I'm not terribly worried about it. I it was kind of like a weird thing. The more that I've gotten into this stuff, I've always been pretty open about how I feel about this, but I think it's just getting, because of the magazine and stuff, that's getting more notice. I don't care. They don't want to be my friend on Facebook. I'm going to be fine. It doesn't matter. Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm going to be
podcast in that
voice. Yeah, no, you know, there was a really large, you know, I won't say, it's a British gin producer. All of their people dumped me. And that, yeah, it's really funny. Well, because, you know, whenever I do a show, and I mean, and not that I don't. I know that people download the show. Obviously, I'm aware of the numbers. But I, like, don't really think anybody really thinks about it or that they're paying that much attention. But then, like, a show will come out, like the Dave Pickerell show, or when we did a show with Maggie, and we got really into the brands. Well, Maggie got really was like, she's like, I'm going to cut a bitch. I mean, she's really, really protective of Dave Pickerell. She did. And it didn't, unfortunately, it wasn't intentionally pulled out of the show. I think it just ended up coming out with something else, but it was funny. So yeah, I mean, you know, I'm always honest about the way I feel about large producers. And if, you know, if you walk like a duck and you talk like a duck, then accept, you know, it's like, we're not part of the marketing machine. I don't have to say what people expect me to say. Or what they hope that, yeah, right. This kind of stuff is what really, you know, I mean, and, you know, for like two young guys that are just like, you know, trying to hold on to their family's history and they are following the rules and, you know, somebody, you know, a European company comes in, you know, in and just wants to, for them, it's nothing. It's just big business for them. Like he said, they're just trying, they're not trying to hurt Nelson's, but they're trying to, you know, put a dent in Jack Daniels. And it becomes this like shitty war that other people get, you know, that they get affected. So I'm proud. I mean, I think, you know, and like we talked about this with Dave, I mean, like, you know, you guys are young businessmen, you're young distillers, but like you guys really took them on. And I think it's amazing that you did, and you did it so well, but it means so much. I don't think that it was that difficult. You guys knew what you were talking about. These things do matter to you. So I think it's easy to fight that fight. But yeah, anybody else, you know, who knows? They would have just been like, oh, well, what are we going to do? And you know, I mean, it's hard to take on a company that big. I don't know if you guys are aware, like it's a huge, what, I don't know, like as far as like the numbers, as far as like the large alcohol producers are, I mean, they've got to be like top three.
Oh, are
they one?
They're the world's largest owner of spirits. Yeah, they own like 60%. I mean, I don't know if that's...
Well, what I would say,
this. But yeah, they're number
if they
one.
Had tried to pull this, if they had tried to pull this anywhere else than in the Deep South, I have no... they would have won. Because nobody, the way that the South is super, super protective of its history...
Deep South nowadays.
Huh?
Tennessee
is deep south. Yeah. I don't know where the fuck you are. Tennessee is deep south. Yeah.
Tennessee for sure qualifies as deep south.
Oh yeah,
south.
Yeah. Like,
well, I feel like south. I just realized it was the bottom. The deep south. Down
no,
there.
But like you, like to you, to, for, to be like a foreign producer to like, I'm sure like all those you know, like whatever state government, the judges, like you're not going to come into our state and start fucking with our history.
Well, you know what's crazy is. The thing is, like, they had successfully confused everybody, and, like, for a minute, everybody in the state government, like, they didn't know what the ramifications were going to be. And, I mean, it was almost, like, the worst-case scenario. And so we had to go around for, like, a week straight just telling everybody, like, no, this absolutely cannot happen. Because they were basically going to say that all you had to do was distill your spirit in Tennessee to call it Tennessee whiskey, and then so you wouldn't even have to age it in any barrel, you wouldn't have to age it in Tennessee, you wouldn't have to have it be a certain Nashville. I mean, they were basically going to be taking away all of the standards.
Well, Charlie, how did they not know this? They had to be presented with this stuff. Did they just not read it? That's like really, it's pretty, well, and of course, like I'm sure they have amazing attorneys, but I would think it would be, have been pretty.
Yeah, and lobbying.
Yeah.
I almost got in a fist fight with the IGA's main lobbyist there outside in the lobby. Because I was just asking him, like, hey, what are you doing, man? Like, what? Why are you telling a bunch of lies out here? And the guy like came at me, and I
really
stood my ground. But someone had to come up and like break us apart.
Dang! Kind of, see that on ABC.
You almost got in a fight with the devil.
Charlie, I would have paid for a ticket to see that.
Oh yeah,
absolutely.
Well, so
and. Yeah,
well, where are they at right now? Do you know? Okay, so for people to understand, like they have in Kentucky, they have a lot of storage space. So what they would have done was they were going to distill in Tennessee and then transport and age in these warehouses that they have, right? just so, like you said, so that they could call it Tennessee. So now they're going to open a distillery in Kentucky, right? Or that's where they like a huge facility.
Yeah. And I don't know exactly what their plans are or anything, but I know that there is some kind of Tennessee state law saying that if you want to call your whiskey Tennessee whiskey, it has to be aged in Tennessee. And apparently, Diageo says that they haven't been aging any of their Tennessee whiskey outside of Tennessee, but for some reason they're suing the state of Tennessee about like with respect to that law.
Right.
And obviously, they're storing some of their whiskey. I don't know whether it's Tennessee whiskey or bourbon outside Tennessee. Anyway, I don't really know exactly what's going on, but something funny is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there's a lot of transferring between their different facilities in Tennessee and Kentucky. And I know they've got that like $115 million. Distillery plan for like Shelby County, Kentucky. I've always thought that they just own George Dickel because it's a cash cow one and they don't have to put any marketing money into it because George Dickel consumers are pretty loyal consumers and, you know, they're already going to be drinking it. And two, because that gives them a supply of used barrels for their scotch.
Right. To send it back
over.
Right. They can send that overseas. Yeah. And then, of course, again, like talking about the you know, the barrel shortage, that, you know, there is a whiskey shortage. There's a, you know, and of course everything's cyclical. Somebody's going to create something next, you know, this, whatever this wave is, but a lot of people are drinking aged spirits, whereas they weren't before, which is great. I mean, I'm glad that they are, but it's like, you know, I had said to Dave, you know, it bothers me a little bit. I really wish there are a lot of small craft producers that are aging their spirits, and they are, you know, they do have to get rid of their barrels as well. I really wish the craft producers would be looking to them first, because usually you don't have to go to a broker. I've done plenty of sourcing for people, and the guys like want to work with you. Sometimes it's like a matter of, hey, let's share a label, or, you know, they want to work with you. And it's like, we're telling people to support you guys as craft producers. Why are you getting barrels from large producers? And I know, like, you know, it's going to happen because so many breweries are aging now and they're running out, but there are a lot. I hope people kind of like even look to like their local producers and develop relationships with other distilleries and small wineries and do the research yourself, because somebody like, especially when you talk about wine, if you don't know where the barrels are coming from, you don't know what kind of off flavors you're going to have with your beer if you don't know the winery and you don't know the barrel. So anyway, what else do you guys want to talk about? We have a little bit of other time. And now, Colin, you've been so quiet. You had some things that you would like to bring up. Why don't you go ahead and maybe just pick one out of your...
Oh, of my ridiculous habits?
Yeah, just, you know, pick the best one. Yeah, but it was really funny because I was like, come up with like one or two things, and he sent me this like ridiculous list, and he's like, nailed it. He's very proud of it.
Before that topic, I was curious on the Tennessee whiskey. Oh. Does the charcoal filtering, does it add flavor or just mellow? Because I know there's sort of that, the argument with, you know, some bourbon people that like to say Tennessee whiskey is bourbon with, like, bourbon can be Tennessee, and go back and forth. Does it add flavor?
Well, I guess there are sort of two sides. You know, some people say that it takes away flavor. Some people say that it adds flavor. And, I mean, the charcoal filtering process, it does remove some, you know, impurities. And so, you know, you could argue that takes away some of the good flavors, or you could argue that it removes some of the bad flavors so that some of the good flavors can shine through better. And it's really, I guess, more up to your personal taste. but chemically, yes, it does remove certain compounds. And I mean, it's like a, as I said before a little bit, kind of like a Brita filter. I mean, you use the Brita filter to remove undesirable compounds from your water.
I think so that all that really matters is it changes the flavor. I don't like taking or adding away from it. Maybe it's slightly subjective. It's like it changes the, if it's taking out impurities, whether that it improves, as far as the people who are making it, obviously they feel like it improves the flavor, they wouldn't do it.
I mean, if it makes something shine through, right.
would have been subdued
otherwise. Then by
people are such dicks. They ask the weirdest. Not you, Colin. I know people ask like stuff like that. It's like, well, it's like, you know.
I agree. People
are the worst.
Well, it's like, well, you know, like Coke or Pepsi. I mean, I hate to use that on this show, but it's like people have different preferences for different reasons. It's like, you know, all these years ago when these guys were developing, this is the taste that they liked. That's why they decided to do it that way, you know? Yeah, it definitely, I mean, it imparts a different flavor. Yeah. It's like, why do you finish something in this barrel instead of that barrel? Why do they have to have charred, one-time charred? You know, they made these really, what did they say? It was because of the cooperage. Like there was back in the day, really, they, and I don't know if this is true or not, and Charlie, because of where you are, you could speak to this. The reason that those laws were put in place was to help those guys make money, right? Like there's not, like there's no real, because almost any other aged whiskey, it's like they love the older barrels. It's like the older the barrel, the better. But like here, you know, like we had so many trees and people needed to make barrels. So we will put a law in place to help the coopers like make more money, you know, the cooperage. Like, so then they became like really, really strong. Well, now we have we don't have a lot of trees anymore. It'll be interesting if they try to change.
Fuck you, tree.
One thing that I don't know if all the listeners would know, but this is what I heard from one of the cooperages that we source barrels from. And the barrel shortage is not completely because there's so many distilleries and breweries and wineries that need barrels nowadays. It really has most to do with the housing industry. And when that really collapsed, a few years ago, that put all the lumber industry people out of a job because most of the lumber industry went to the housing market. And, you know, maybe upwards of 80-90% of it went there. And so when they were out of business, all the loggers were out, so they weren't producing the wood that we would need now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys heard the same thing, but that was the story related to me from the cooperage that we primarily use.
Yeah, I've heard that and mixed with that the last year, there were some really wet seasons, and it made it a lot more difficult for the loggers for their equipment to go in and actually chop down the trees. It's not so much that there aren't trees available, but it was very difficult for the guys operating the machinery to go in and actually chop down the trees because the ground was, you know, all muddy and they were getting caught and stuff. And so
unlike lumber men.
Yeah,
it's muddy.
It rained today.
I bet they have good beards too, Charles.
Yeah. What's that? I said, I bet they have good beards too.
Good beards, and a lot of flannel. Can't beat a beard with flannel.
Nice. I think most people think that I'm a lumberjack most of the time, or at least they tell me so.
You don't look like a lumberjack. It's the beard. It's the beard. The glorious beard. And
maybe it's the axe I carry around with me everywhere I go. Right. I don't
know. The big blue bull.
Exactly.
Better action, buddy.
I'm actually really proud. Dave, you've really held it together. We're like almost done, and you've like really. He hasn't been drinking.
Time for it to fall apart. Ready? Go.
Right. You've really dropped the ball, Wags. I mean, I brought Colin on here because I said to Colin, you don't want to miss this train wreck. You've got to come on.
Ouch.
Wags. And at the time, I think Wags was really in it. There ain't no train wreckage going on.
There ain't no train wreck around here.
So, Corey, is there anything that you want to talk about? And Brian, too. You mean, like, you guys are our brewers. Is there anything going on in the beer industry that you guys want to talk about? Anything going on in St. Louis?
St. Louis-wise? No, I mean, not really. We finally have kind of slowed down maybe a little bit. We had breweries open and left and right there for a little bit. Perennial Side Project keep me pretty busy, and we're just trying to grow, and we just We got a new barrel room, so we're expanding. Got a bunch of new oak. We just got in two fruiters the other day. Three fruiters, oh, yeah. Sorry. You know, so there's a lot of that stuff going on really around here. And I've been just kind of keeping my head down and doing that. I haven't got out into the market much. I don't get out there very much anymore.
Your beers are just sure. are all word of mouth, I think. You know, it's really funny because I heard about you and really Kate Gallagher. It, you know, she's one of the writers on my magazine. And, you know, of course, like, mm-hmm. she's like, you got to talk to this guy. He's doing really, really great stuff. And of course, I knew about, Perennial, but it was like, as soon as she told me about it, I mean, like, and Kate, like, really, really has her finger on the pulse of beer. I mean, she really knows every great brewer. And it's funny, like, they all go to town as big as Chicago is. It's like, they all love her. But, yeah, she was really, really pumped about what you're doing. And then as soon as I heard about her, about you from her, I was seeing you everywhere. So,
Well, thank you.
Well, I mean, it's true, but
she's great people. Her and yeah. Tom are awesome in Northbound, one of my favorite places. I've taken beer up to Chicago just pretty much once, to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I went to Northbound one night and did a tasting at Northbound because I love them. And, I'm actually really good friends with Christina at West Lake View Liquor right around the corner. So it just kind of works out that area right there works for me in Chicago. But she's amazing people. We're actually Side Project and Perennial are setting up some beer to her Lions Tigers and
the fundraiser
event.
Yeah, I would love
yeah, the fundraiser.
We're gonna end up doing, and of course, like Wegs will say, I'm gonna somehow try. I don't know if how we're gonna do it. If it's gonna end up being fall or if it's gonna have to be spring. Mm-hmm. The way that it works,
maybe 2025, 2026. Your time
frame is that we're tough. Yes. So count on that and yeah, just be pleasantly surprised if I come before.
Yeah, you have a low bar to meet right here.
So this, you know, I don't want to say on the air why, but you know, I have to go to, well, of course, like I do have to go to Vermont anyway because I need to go to Vermont for Veterans and Craft.
Sure.
But uh-huh. and of course I need to go to Chicago because like so many of my people are in Chicago. And I mean, you're my people too, Wags. But the people on craft,
the best people. It's Corey here in St. Louis now.
Yeah, Corey is one of my people now. But no, so we, you know, we've talked about doing.
I'm official.
We've talked about. Kate wants me to do a promo for craft at North Down, so I've got to try to time it.
Oh, that'd be
yeah,
awesome.
It'll be very cool. And I've talked to the guys about doing a collaboration beer. You know, I think we'll do two collaboration beers. Yeah. So, you know, and really, like Chicago is just this reoccurring thing for me. I don't know why. Like I always say, I'm just trying to get a key to that city. I'm like, I think I've covered everybody, like not everybody that's worth covering. That's a terrible thing to say. There's tons of great people there, but everybody that I've wanted to cover in Chicago so far, we've had on, and a lot of them are reoccurring guests. And, you know, like Colin is on the magazine. Kate is on the magazine. Charles Jolie is on the magazine. Mm-hmm. So we need to get out of the way. And I do. I've promised Wegs. I'm not sure the tie-in yet for me with St. Louis, apart from just seeing you so you will shut up. But
she's going to drive through and wave at you on her way to Chicago. I don't think it's going to be waved so much as a flipping off.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, I need to see Dennis, you know, like Dennis,
yeah.
Dennis, who brought us together.
You can see us all in one afternoon. It's really wonderful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I will like somehow if I hope I don't have, I mean, I don't know if that sure. needs to be that way, but if I end up driving.
It's all in good fun. Huh? It's all in good fun. The shit we give you.
And just like all the shit that I give you is in good fun.
What shit?
Exactly. But no, I would love to get there. And Corey, I would love to get you back on here. And of course, Charlie, we'll talk. When I told you, as soon as the magazine launches, the next time you're in town, we'll get together. It's been so, I literally have not left. Like I have worked all weekend here. I haven't even left. I was like up. Like, I haven't left the house. It's been literally just, like, that's what it's going to be like till the end of the month. But then after, until the next magazine, well, what am I talking? It's, like, never, ever going to end. I'm already working on issue two. Right, Collins? Collins already got his assignments. But, I'm excited about that. And, of course, like, we didn't get a chance to talk about it. I talked about it. Of course, Weglars is already a part of Veterans and Craft. And I would love to talk to you. Like, Charlie, when you guys are actually up and running, I brought up Veterans and Craft on on your show when I, but you guys weren't distilling yet. At some point I'll hit you up. Cause I think what we're going to do is we're going to end up doing a soft launch in the South and up where Steve is in Vermont and in the New England area. So, I got to find some distillers. We got a lot of breweries, but there's not a whole lot of distillers. It's just to help to train and, not for you to hire, but to just help vets with their skills, you know, if they want to work in a distillery. It doesn't mean that they want to be distillers, but anything that has to do, whether it's marketing or, you know, sales, distilling, whatever, we're trying to help them find employment. So yeah, I'll be making the rounds, talking to everybody.
Well, we're looking at a couple of vets hiring.
Oh, good. Great.
Right. Anyway.
No. It's fantastic. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're happy if it doesn't have to be with us. Like, I feel bad because it came up on Dave Pickerell on the show, on the Veterans Day show with Dave Pickerell, and I've had to put this off. I knew there was no way that I could tackle it when I had started working on the magazine. Yeah. So now that we're getting to a point, Steve is almost, well, he's not almost done. He's has a huge brewery expansion that's a little bit behind. As soon as it's done and I'm at a place at Craft where we can really start working on it, we'll do it. And so I'll be visiting everybody. Yay!
Hell yeah, Tori, you're talking about, you're taking a hiatus, obviously, much needed break. But you're going to come back with the Under My Host podcast?
Yeah, he's so worried. Like, yes, Wags, I'm coming back. Yeah, he was worried when I told him that I needed to take, it's just so much right now that when we come back, it's going to be every other week. I've got to, you know.
That's fine.
Okay, good.
I'll allow that. Yeah,
it's awesome. It's Weglar's right. Approved.
Well, because you have to remember that. When the magazine is underway and when Veterans and Craft is going on, like I may not be here that much. So it's trying to the logistics of where I'm going to be and trying to record a show. Like the dynamic is going to change completely. So
it just means I get to sit in my studio in my house and record you on the phone
and not have any of this going on. Well, you will, but
no,
I won't.
No,
he'll be having some of this going on.
I'm glad no one can see the hand gestures here.
It's going to be hard for me to get booze from the guests. That's what you're
saying. That's not my concern. You know, it's different. You know, it's different. If I'm not going to be here, so it's stuff that we'll have to address when the time comes. Like, I'm not going anywhere yet. But I needed a break to really focus on a couple of things. And the show, I love doing the show, but it's just time is at a premium right now. But I appreciate that you will miss us when we're not recording.
Sure. Yeah. Well, none of us, us local craft guys, really know what it's like for time to be at a premium. We just got hours and hours in the day.
See, he's real smart. Okay, but so remember, it's like somebody had said, so this guy went to go visit Steve, and he listens to the show, and I'm not ragging on you at all, but it was just very funny, because I said, did you get a chance to see him when you were there? And he's like, I said, you know, he's such a busy beaver. And he's like, yeah, you know, running a brewery, running a distillery, it's busy. And I was like, and he is an officer in the Army, and, you know, he is building out like a 16,000 square foot brand new brewery, and he has a family. And it's like, you know, it's the same with me. It's like, I have a job, and I have the show, and I have craft, and I have a nonprofit organization. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that you don't. It's just, and I have to, and I'm wearing.
Well, I don't have a lot of those, so thanks.
I'm just saying, it's, I can't, I don't want to do so much and not do any of it well. So, you know, I have to.
Sure. We love the Under My Host and we want to keep being able to listen to it and meet these people.
I promise. I'm coming back. The show is coming back. We're just going to take a little break, and it'll be weird even for me, you know, recording every other week and then only releasing a show every other week. It feels weird because I'm like, how do I cover everything? So I think the solution may be doing shows like this, where it is harder. There'll probably have to be less people, but we're like, you know, if Corey were to come on and talk about side project, like I want him to be able to really focus on what he's doing. So, but when we're only doing it twice a week or twice a month, I'm going to figure it out. I have no idea what we're doing yet.
You know what would be awesome is when you're traveling around to different places, you get all the people from one place in physically in the same room drinking together and record that. Yeah.
I would have to have a crew in every city that I go to. It's
No, it's a tape recorder. No, I'm not worried about the details. That's on you.
That or travel. But I mean, everybody's on the phone except
they no budget for
you guys. Just all sit. No, you guys just all sit in different.
Well, I know the recording is very different when you're actually in, when you don't have to do this, like we're phoning in, this becomes, the way that we record is much more complicated than whenever we've recorded shows when everybody's in one room and it's recorded. It's not as complicated, but it's stuff that I'm going to think about when the time comes. We don't have to worry about it yet, but I do appreciate you worrying. You're very sweet.
I'm worrying for all of us. That's all.
Hey, well, Wags, you know what? I'll get shit faced and call you like every Thursday night.
But listen, did everybody get a chance to talk about what they wanted to talk about and ask what they wanted to ask? Yeah.
Well, I'll have a lot more questions for Corey when we do the
when we do his show.
Yeah.
I look forward to recording. Cool. So, but you know, Corey King, I may have to start calling you. Well, we won't have to get another show.
King Corey.
King Corey.
King Corey.
King Corey.
Exactly.
So,
Corey.
Or your Grace.
No. But so, Corey King of Side Project Brewing and Charlie Nelson of Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery and Bellmead Bourbon, and Dave Weglars of Still 630. And Colin, my buddy, my little brother, ST. I won't say what ST means on the show.
I don't want to end before we know.
Do you guys not know? Do you know what it is? Right? I call him that. It just seems weird when we actually say it because I just call you ST now. Sugar tits. That's his nickname. And he loved it. Was, you know what's weird is I was like trying to like put like you pick on like your little brother, and he loved it. He was like, "Oh, I should have put that in my bio."
Sugar tits.
You in trouble? Who in trouble? Not me.
the sponsors would love that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Advertising amazing with a guy named Sugar.
Yes. Maple barrel age sugar tits. That's
our awesome. Advertisers are people like, not saying that Dave's that, but they're people like Dave Weglars. They're not, it's not nearly what you're, it's not Diageo. I don't have to impress.
What kind of caliber people are you talking about?
our advertisers are the people who are getting shit faced in the middle of the day and tweeting about it. Okay.
Wegs, I'll call you on Thursday. We'll get drunk. We'll talk about this.
But listen, but you guys,
grand plan.
Exactly. And I'm not saying like these are all great people. They're just genuine people. It's not, there's not a lot of marketing and candy coating, which I love. It's my favorite part. But you guys, I want to thank everybody for joining in with us. Of course it was fun and hopefully everybody got a chance to talk about what they wanted to. But we will do this again. I think did you have something you want to say, ST? Are you just giggling?
You're just giggling.
If you guys want if you guys want to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram,
on Stitcher,
www.undermyhost.com. Thanks everybody, have a great night.